Ready?
Yep.
Trust your guide.
Trust your guide.
Fish on.
Here we go, baby. Let's go.
Woohoo! Ready to go fishing.
Oh, baby. Boat-tastic.
No! Oh, Keaton.
That was so cool.
Dude, that's a big one.
Nice, Jed.
Snorts were so intimidating. There can't be another animal in North America that can make a sound remotely like that.
No.
But first, a word for our partners.
Alaska Rod Co., Alaskan handmade rods.
National Wild Turkey Federation, South Sound Strutters, your conservation organization for Washington State turkey populations and habitats. Shell Art Studio, original Alaskan-focused art.
Slay Jays, it ain't all about the catching.
Welcome back to another episode of the Young Guides Podcast. I'm Keaton, and today we're going to have Heather Aldridge on from Bravo Tents. We're actually sitting in the Sportsman Show right now, so you might hear some background noise. This is my first live podcast that I've done that hasn't been over Zoom. It's an in-person podcast, so really excited about this. And Heather and her husband John have been building Bravo Tents for about 30 years now. So we're going to dive in a little bit about Heather's life, how they got into Bravo Tents, and just kind of learn about that. So that being said, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So Heather, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh my, I'm old. I feel old some days. I grew up with five brothers and really into fishing, but never got into hunting much. John and I got married 28 years ago, and right after we got married, he took me elk hunting and deer hunting and all the things, and I've really enjoyed it. You know, of course, he was building Bravo Tents at that time, and so I got into that industry, and it was totally different than what I grew up with, but it was my niche, and it was so much fun, and I definitely love being part of the outdoor industry. It affords us so many opportunities. You know, we get to meet people like you.
Yeah.
And, made lots of friends over the years. So, yeah.
So did you do any hunting before you met John?
No. Fishing.
A lot of fishing.
Big time fishing, yeah.
Okay. Did your family do any hunting, or were you kind of?
No.
Not anti-hunting?
Just not into it.
Yeah.
I mean, gardening and living off the land, that kind of a thing, canning, but not hunting.
Not hunting. What kind of, like, salmon fishing growing up?
Trout, mostly trout.
Yeah.
Mostly trout.
Are you from Washington?
Actually born and raised in Oregon.
Okay.
And then when John and I got married, I moved to Washington and have been here ever since.
Nice. So you're saying John started the Bravo Tents a while back.
Yes, he did.
How long was he doing it before you joined in?
Oh, man.
Got married and...
Gosh, that's so long ago. I can't do math.
Yeah.
It was quite a while. So he was a fishing guide for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he's dabbled in a lot of things because he has a multitude of interests. So he's very good at a lot of different things.
Okay.
So he was a welder for a while. He's run crane. All those things, metal fabrication, all that kind of thing. And a lot of that goes into the tents, just life experiences and whatnot. But he had already started it. And they say that's the hardest part of a business when you first start it up, is the initial startup, and it's hard on marriages. So he already had it growing and doing well before we got married. So I skipped that step. And I'm like,
that's kind of a blessing in disguise.
It was. And then I came in and I organized it because that's what wives do, right?
Yeah.
So I got all this paperwork in order and got things computerized and more modernized. And so we run a tight ship now.
So before we dive into talking about the business and Bravo Tent, what was your experience hunting? How'd you get into it? And what kind of experiences did you?
So back then, things were a lot different than they are now. There was definitely less women in the field than what we have nowadays, which is just wonderful. I absolutely love it. So there wasn't as many products available to us. It was a hand-me-down, wearing your brother's wool stuff, whatever you could get your paws on. And it was a little bit harder in that regard. They did have some really good boots at that time. So I remember he bought my first pair of hunting boots.
Nice.
And I love those things. They lasted me 14 years. They owe me nothing. There was a lot of miles on those. They owed me nothing. But so John took me out the very first time we did was an elk hunt. And we were out every day hunting elk, and we were riding horses and going from place to place. And finally I asked him, because I couldn't understand, I said, is there something I don't know about elk hunting? And he says, what's that? And I said, well, why are we passing by the elk? And he's like, hold up. What? I said, well, if we keep driving by the elk, is there something wrong with them? Like,
yeah,
do they have to be something I don't get? You've been seeing elk this whole time and you said nothing? I said, well, we went right by it. We figured they weren't the right thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. I said, like those ones right there.
And there was some elk standing right
there. Oh yeah. And there was a legal bull. And so he like dives in after him. He never did get him, but he comes back out and he's like, that's it, we're getting you a tag.
Yeah.
Because when I first got married to him, since I was raised with fishing and not hunting, I wasn't 100% sure if I would be comfortable hunting. And so there was a great big metamorphosis in that, like where I changed from just being a fisher, gardener, canner to I can do this and I like it. This is fun being out there and enjoying that time. And so, yeah, it was a little bit of a growing thing for me. But the main thing I think for me was that although I love the elk hunting and I love the deer hunting, they weren't really my animals, if that makes sense. You know, when you first start out, you're not sure where you want to go. Some people become bird hunters and bird hunters only. Yeah. Some people are really good at it all and they take it all in. And I just, it was like, no, it's fun, but it's not quite my thing. So when I discovered bear hunting, I was in like Flynn. Like that's my jam right there. That's my end. And so that's where I spent the last, you know, 25 years is studying bears and learning everything I can about them, because that's
yeah.
How
would you say from when you first started hunting to where you are now, how do you feel like the development went? Do you feel like there was a lot of self-development, or do you feel like having John with you?
It's funny you should say that.
Yeah.
So he has always been a huge supporter and a huge helper. But, you know, married couples, maybe it's not always the best thing in the field. I'm just saying, you know, it works fine for us, but not for everyone. So he definitely helped, but his animals that he's interested in are different than mine. And so we kind of veered paths a little bit. We still hunted together. I'm not sure how to quantify that exactly. There was a lot of growing, mostly because of mistakes, like any other thing you learn. I'd go out and I'd blow a bear out of something and I'd be so upset and I'd come back, you know, and he'd be like, honey, it's okay. There'll be a bear tomorrow. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You know, my world has ended. I spooked the bear away. And, you know, just growing as a person, but and as you age, getting life experiences, knowing that failures are good because they help us become better in whatever it is that we're trying to learn. When I first started, failures were like, you know, massively awful and, you know, red light, nuclear war is going on. Oh no, the world has ended. And now I embrace them and go, okay, well, that was stupid. Won't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, but he has been a huge, huge help in that area for me. But
I mean, we talked about developing as a hunter. We are at the sportsman show right now. And you're doing seminars on bear hunting, you know. When you first started, did you ever think you're like, I'm going to be running seminars?
Well, never.
No.
Never in a million years did I ever think I'd be standing up there and telling people how to go do this and making them laugh. But, you know, I enjoy that. I love to hear people having a good time and just, you know, we're talking hunter to hunter and encouraging them and things. And, you know, my ultimate goal is to help them be better. And they can avoid some of the dumb mistakes that I did. You know, no need to do it two times.
I think I've heard that you help out with like women in the outdoors and that kind of program.
So
how did you get into that?
So actually, it's on its 11th year. It started out as ladies hunting camp. And it's put on by Candy and Randy Young. They are phenomenal, awesome people. They came to several of the sportsman shows way back when and talked to us about doing and being part of the very first ladies camp. And I hadn't met her yet. John had talked to her already. And then she came back to the booth and she talked to me and I fell in love with this lady. I'm like, she is the real deal. This is a lot of people that come and they talk and they're not. But she is 100% the real deal. Her heart for women and getting them out in the outdoors is phenomenal. So I told Donna, I said, we 100% have to be part of this. We have to be part of this. So we've been doing that. Like I said, this will be its 11th year. I truly enjoy our time there. I do have camp dates. They are coming up. Let's see. Ladies Hunting Camp is going to be July 25th to the 28th. And that's going to be in Dry Creek Ranch in Fort Rock, Oregon. Again, that's put on by the Gallus Hunting Camp. They are on Facebook, Instagram. They have a website. So ladies can go on there and they can register. It's a phenomenal program. We have a lot of women instructors that come from all kinds of things. So we've got people talking turkey, people talking blacktail, elk hunting, predator hunting. That's my bitch. You know, how to set a wall tent up. You've got ladies that they don't know where to begin. So we're trying to give them the skills, right? To get out in the woods and be successful. And I mean, they come from all over the United States and they leave friends. It's funny because I've had women ask me, like, okay, there's a whole bunch of ladies in one spot. Is there going to be like, we have to be careful not step on a hormone? You know, I said, no, it's never like that. We have a great time there. And we run them pretty hard, but there's lots of classes and they can choose the things that interest them. And if it's not, they don't have to take a class. There's no forced participation in this. So it's a really great thing to be part of. And we usually do like a small tent to give away there at the camp. So that'll be up. We haven't actually talked exactly what we're doing this year for that, but it's up on Facebook.
Yeah. We'll share that again at the end of the podcast. Yeah. I go through some things here, so
yeah,
we'll share that. So getting into, you know, the tent business, and you came in. Did you guys have experience with wall tents previous to starting?
So I didn't, but John did. Uh-huh. And it was actually funny. He loves to tell this story. He went to a garage sale and he bought a old sewing machine, an old Singer, because, you know, he's a little on the shorter side, so he needed to hem his pants. So the lady gave him a 15-minute lesson on how to use a sewing machine. And somewhere along in there, his engineering brain got going, built a tent. And he started doing that. Yeah. And so it just grew from that. It started with the one tent here or another tent there before it was actually a company. And then he, you know, he has refined it and gone over it so that we are where we are now.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. Just talking to the customers and listening to their hunting stories. And that's one of the things I love about the sportsman shows. So all our old customers come back. They show us their pictures, the things that have been happening in their life. You know, they watched our kids grow up. They ask about our children. It's more like a family, as opposed to just the business, just trying to make a buck, because that's not what we're about at all.
Yeah. So how long does one of your wall tents usually last? Like, you're using it a lot. You're an avid hunter. You're getting out with it.
We've got tents that are as old as this company out there, still running fine.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So are they, do they have a wax space on the outside?
So it's
kind of break down your tents for us a little bit.
So the fabric itself is going to come to us from the mill pre-treated. So it is coming, the mill takes it dips it in big fats. Uh-huh. So it soaks through the fabric. And then it comes back to us, you know, whoever's ordering canvas, going to come on big rolls. But it's different than a canvas where you just spray a treatment over the top of it.
Yeah.
And those are the kind that, you know, in 10, 15 years, they're going to start to leak and you're going to have issues with, because it's a spray-on finish as opposed to a dry finish like what we're getting with this green canvas. So the first thing, you know, if you want a good tent, you got to start with good quality fabric.
Yeah.
We always buy first. And then even in the first goods, you're going to find little blems. John, because he's an engineer type mind, has created a specialized table that we run the fabric across, and it illuminates the fabric so we can see if there's any kind of blurbs in it that we're like, oh, that's got to go, and it gets cut out. It's not going our tent.
Yeah.
So the guy that's getting the product from us, it's a mom and pop. We've been doing this for a while now, and we want to put the best thing on the market that we can. Not just production style, cookie cutter type tent. It's not a one size fit all. We're trying really hard to listen to our customers and produce what it is they need, not what we think they need. What do they need to meet their specific thing? So, you know, you've got guys that are outfitters, the tent's going to be up for months. Right, and then you've got guy that only uses it a week out of an entire year. Yeah. Those are very different purposes, and what they might need would be different.
Yeah.
So
when you're selling tents to the general public, do you have different sizes for people? Because I mean, not everyone's going to be a
right.
You know, a guide setting up a tent yep. for 2 months. Do you sell different sizes, and do you have like sizes that maybe people can pack in
yep.
or
okay yeah. So we have a multitude of sizes, and then we do a lot of custom work too. So there could be a guy that's flying in as opposed to packing in. He has to meet certain dimensions and certain weight, certain volume. And then our packers, the same thing. They have to certain volume. Volume's really important when we start talking about packing something in.
Yeah.
So you can go to aluminum framing, which reduces your weight, but your volume is 3 times the size to carry the same weight that like a conduit tube would or the fence rail tube would.
Yeah.
So yeah, we listen really carefully to that. There's a multitude of sizes. And we do custom sizes for people that, you know, they got to sit on a specific dimension, say like a wood platform. We built them or that. Four guys, they had like a trailer, and they wanted to be able to pull the trailer out as a flatbed and set the tent up on it when they got to camp. So it had to fit between the wheel wells and, you know, extra. There's math involved in that. A lot of math. But we got it done. And lots of stuff we can do.
Yeah, so you had to add shapes to make it fit around the
wheel. Cutouts and,
because
there's usually like a couple welded sections. I can't think of what they're called, rod pocket like stuff that they put in those, and you got to cut around it.
Yeah, imagine sleeping on that and it rolls away on you in the middle of the night. You're hopping on, getting ready for bed, midnight.
That'd be bad.
I would 10 on wheels, I mean. Yeah, that's not good. So, yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned they dip the fabric in, and then so are you getting them in just rolls of fabrics?
Or? It can be called a bale. It can be called a roll.
Like, what do they look like when they come to you?
Heavy.
Like heavy. Forklift heavy?
Yeah, like yeah. I was rolling one of the, we got a delivery just after the snowstorm. That's a whole nother long conversation.
Yeah.
We finally got our freight in, and I was rolling one of the fabric rolls, and it kind of rolled back and squished my finger.
Oh.
It was unhappy. But you know,
imagine.
Yeah, they're like 200 pounds.
Yeah.
So they're up there. But that's how ours comes. It used to come way back when in huge bales and boxes, and anymore it's been coming on rolls. And it's all good.
So we're sitting inside of a Bravo tent right now. What are you using for like poles to keep the tent up?
So this
might have not been the right terminology.
It's a frame.
Frame poles. Yeah.
It's an internal frame.
Yep.
So this is a steel frame.
Okay.
We do have aluminum. And then there's some other options on top of that. If a guy's packing in and he needs to reduce weight, we can do some A-frames or different things like that.
What about for connection points? How do you make sure that it stays connected? And
I mean, like the sorry, we're still talking about the frame.
Yeah, about the frame. Yeah, we can talk about both. Like, how do you connect it in the frames? How do you make sure that stays sturdy? And then with the canvas on the outside, how are you connecting that to the frame to make sure it doesn't blow away?
So there's lots of things with a tent. So when a tent is put up, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to build the ridge and the eaves and put those together. Then the canvas goes over the top. Then the legs go on last, and we're going to put the whole structure up in the air. Then we're going to stake it all down. one side and the other. There's guy ropes that come off the lead. We're going to run those out. We're going to stake those down. So we're staking guy ropes and we're staking the bottom of the tent so that winds come up and whatnot, you're going to be golden. In addition to that, we do a lot of reinforcing for the guys that are like coastal type winds. We'll put some extra tie points and holding points on a tent so it can withstand those 60 mile per hour winds and stay put. Because the worst thing that happens at night, you're laying in bed and you get whipped in the tent wall because of those heavy winds, so we put stuff in there to get that whip out.
How do you go test something like that?
Oh lord,
you put it up and then take it out to the coast and
there's lots of tent testing trips.
Yeah,
and so my husband has gotten hot tongue and cold shoulder because sometimes they don't work. We'll take a new design out. So that's one of the things that we always tell our customers is anything that we've put on the market, we've already used. We've taken it out, we've beaten it up, and we've seen what it's done. Where is its failing point? Where's the things where that was great, but we need to do this a little bit different so it'll work better. Yeah. And so when the end user gets it, it's tried, true, and they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah.
So breaking down a tent, right? This is a pretty large area inside the tent. How small does it break down to?
Pretty small.
Pretty small.
This is a 12 by 15. So your actual tent, when it rolls up into a bag, it's not very tall. I mean, we're looking at a table in here. It's what, 4 foot tall, maybe? I don't know. It might be that tall. And it's going to be about that big around. I know it doesn't help people on a podcast, but.
Yeah, probably about 2 feet, foot.
Yeah, at the most.
Yeah.
At the most.
Wow, that's impressive. And then are the frame poles.
Yeah, they're going to break down into several. So you're going to have angle kit. Uh-huh. You're going to have all the angle pieces, which are all the corner brackets that you see in here and along the ridge line, everywhere where the poles meet and they come into multiple point here. That's going to be one of your angles. That goes into a bag, and then all of your frame will go into a bag. Same thing. And of course, as you go up in bigger tents, like 15, 21s, 21 by 30s, you're going to have a lot more frame bags and a lot more framing.
Yeah.
So,
I was noticing, I saw a picture of one with a door on the front. So they frame that door in and then build the tent around it, or?
So we've done a lot of custom work for people who are doing kind of a glamping. Or they'll want a temporary structure for while they're building a house. So they'll put a platform up and we build them a tent to fit the platform, and then they'll put a man door in it or French doors or something like that. So we'll reinforce it. John creates all the custom work for that where they can put their man door in. But the tent goes up and then they frame it.
Oh, cool.
We just get dimensions from them and build it to suit.
So have you heard of anyone spending, like living in one of these tents?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
how does that go over pretty well?
Yeah.
Do they feel like they have to maintain them a little more?
There's always going to be maintenance in anything you have.
Absolutely.
If you're going to have a tent up year round, you're going to want some heat in it when it's really cold and wet and yucky, right? So they're going to have the wood stove, so you're going to have to clean the ashes out and some things like that. But basically, as far as maintenance on the tent itself, there is none. Just keep it dry on the inside, meaning I'm going to put heat in here. I don't want this to sit up for months on end in the rainy season and not having heat to it because it's getting mold in it.
Yeah.
It has mildew inhibitors in it. All that means is it gives you some time. People hear fire retardant or mildew inhibitors and they think that means nothing. No, but it can't burn or it can't mildew. And that's not true. That's not true. I mean, you can get iron to mildew if you do it right. So, but basically, there are people who do. Like I said, while they're building a house, we've got some pictures. Not sure where they're at right now, but some people were building a house, and so they were homeschooling their kids, and like they had the bookcases in there and a whole schoolroom set up, and it was,
wow, that's cool.
It was really cute and well done and laid out, very methodical, and so I admire a lot of our customers because they can do cool things that I never thought about doing with some of these tents. I'm like, oh that's a good idea.
That's so smart.
Yeah, they're very smart people.
So how would you say Bravo Tent compares to like other generic tent?
I don't like those questions.
I know this is a tough question, but let's go on like a positive path for you, right? Compared to other tents, how do you feel like your stance in the market?
I think that we compete fairly against the other brands in the sense of quality, we try to, like I said, we always try to listen to our customers, which is really important to us. A lot of our customers have become like family to us. And I think that, you know, we try to offer the best service that we can to each and every single one of them. And there's benefits with having, like, if you're in this local area, to having a local manufacturer that you can come to. We've got a real face you can come and talk to. It's not just some person on a phone way back over somewhere. You know, it is a U.S.-made product, and we're pretty happy about trying to keep as much as we can of the manufacturing in the United States that they've been losing so much of. So it's, I think we're too proud of that, but I it's just the way we were raised. You know, we take pride in being a U.S. manufacturer.
Yeah, so. That is awesome. And you don't hear, like you're saying, you don't hear of a lot of, I mean, look at our hunting and fishing industry, right?
Yeah.
A lot of it comes from overseas, China, Taiwan, wherever, over there. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's definitely, it's nice to have something American made. I use an American made fly rod company, and it's nice because you can send it right to them.
Yeah,
right back to you, you know.
Yes,
same
exactly.
With your tent.
Exactly.
You can send, you're not sending it to the company and overseas or wherever you need it. So that's really good to hear.
And I think one of the other things that we specialize in is repair work.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of repair work. So we see all brands of tents.
Okay.
So not just stuff made in the U.S., stuff made overseas, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it comes into our manufacturing facility. We fix it all up. We'll tell a guy, here's what you need done.
Yeah.
You know, he could say yay or nay. We're good with whatever. So we'll give him a quote. And a lot of times we schedule them and we try to get done as fast as we can for that person. So he's not waiting forever, right?
Absolutely.
You don't want to leave your tent there and be like, okay, it's been like 8 months.
Yeah.
Like, where's my tent? We don't do that. So when you bring in all these other tents and you see the things that consistently are going wrong and blowing out, it could be a bad door design. It could be improper reinforcing. It can be improper use of materials, these kinds of things. We could take all that knowledge and put it into our tents and be like, well, we're not putting that in there because it is not going to work, right?
Yeah.
Because you see the same failure points over and over and over again. So,
So you have a service business, also building new.
Yep.
Is it just you and John doing this?
So
or do you have employees?
So yes and no. It is John and I full time. And then our daughter works for us. Our son, until recently, was working for us. And then we've always encouraged our children to go do their own thing. We didn't want them to ever be stuck. You know, mom and dad have a business, so you got to do it too. We didn't want that. We wanted them to be free and to be whoever they were made to be. And so my son one day said, you know, I really want to go be a millwright. We said, go for it, kid. And he did. So he's got an apprenticeship and he's been having a good time and learning a new thing.
Okay.
But yeah, so that was awesome. And we're real proud of him, you know. I think it was a hard choice for some of us. But, you know, because he was very good at his job.
Yeah.
Right. But he's taken that skill set of knowing how to build wall tents, knowing how to build frames and work with metal and all that stuff. And taken it into this millwright industry and done real well for himself.
That's so awesome. Yeah. That's really good to hear.
Well, he's one of those kind of people who likes to take things apart and put them back together again. So it's right down his eye.
Right down the eye.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the wall tents itself. What kind of accessories do you offer? And then are you guys making the accessories or are you like getting outsourced, bringing them in and stuff?
Right. So we do not make the wood stoves. We retail wood stoves. We have a couple different wood stoves that we carry. And there's reasons why we carry them. Again, it's through testing, trial and error, and things that sucked. You know, where you're freezing to death and mama's not happy. So, not happy. So we've taken a lot of different stoves out and played with them. And so what we bring to these shows, like you see here, there's our tried and true. They're awesome. So in the tent right now, we have a cylinder stove. It is a USA-made stove. Again, we're going back to that. They're great. They are long lasting. You don't have to worry about burning the bottoms out. I mean, they're good. And they can come with water tanks. What a lot of people don't realize when they buy a wood stove that has a water tank on it, not all of them are potable water. On the cylinder stove, it is. So you can put water in there and you can make your coffee or your tea and whatever, and it's totally safe. Some of the products are lead soldered, which these are not. So you actually can't use it for anything other than washing your hands or, you know, it's like, why?
You're washing your hands. With
right?
Lead. Yeah.
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
And then the other one we have in here is a pellet stove, which I adore. So we mentioned the kids. We have had a 1521 forever in a day. And now our kids are of age, 21 and 23, and they're kind of doing their own thing. And they don't come with us as much. So it's just John and I going out hunting. So we'll bring the pellet stove. And for me, too, since I broke my leg 5 years ago, this has been a huge godsend. Because I was raised with five brothers. I can run a chainsaw. I can do wood. No big deal. I can do it all. But it just hurts me anymore to bend down and pick it up and do the whole thing. So this pellet stove is an awesome, awesome thing for me. I can put the pellets in and I don't have to worry about it.
So this wood stove that we're looking over here, can you cook on top of
this? Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. We've made many meals in our tents on top of that. So we used to do, the first night in camp, would usually be like turkey breast and mashed potatoes and gravy and all Dutch oven stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we'd do a whole big feast. And they're great for cooking on.
Yeah, that's nice to have. In case, you know, I think everyone's had an experience where they've gone out and been like, oh, shit, the propane, you know.
It does go rowdy today.
Yeah. Things won't connect. And it's just nice to have a backup. What made you select these stoves? And what brands are they, if we can just share that?
Sure. So this is the cylinder stove brand. This is the little
Tumor. It's called cylinder stove.
Yes, it is in fact called cylinder stoves. And then this is the little Timber, the pellet stove. And again, it's through trial and error. We've carried different brands for different reasons.
Yeah.
And these are the ones we bring to the show are tried and true. They're going to work for people. They're going to do the job.
Yeah.
And you know, be consistent in performance. There are some stoves out there that they can perform okay if they're in the right circumstances, but when you get them out of that box, they don't work as well.
Yeah.
We don't want people to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
No, that's not.
You want to stay warm, especially if you've gone out hunting and it's cold or wet and rainy.
And you come back, you want to be dry.
Yeah, you want to dry out and feel more human again. I've also seen some, I'm looking around and I see other accessories here. You got a gear pocket.
Yep.
What is this? Is that a sun shield or?
So that's a heat shield.
Okay.
So behind the wood stove where the radiant heat is coming helps protect the wall. It helps make the tent last longer. You know, it's not like it's going to happen tomorrow, but over 20 years of using a wood stove, that radiant heat starts to break down the fabric.
Yeah.
So it's just going to make your tent last longer.
Yeah, that makes sense. And is that something that you make in house? Okay.
Yep.
And do you carry stoves in house or?
Yeah.
So you have like a little stock or?
We carry some. It depends on the time of year.
Yeah.
You know, right now, yes, because we're doing shows, so we've got a lot of stock in. But as the year progresses and we get closer to hunt season, stuff's getting shipped all out and stuff. Yeah. So don't call me September 1 and
ask for a wood stove.
Well, we could probably do it, but you know, at some point, it's we're leaving for hunts too.
Yeah.
And so we always try to be real careful with our timing of the calendar and when we put tents on it, where we can ship out at a safe time frame, where they're not waiting on a phone call or something from us because, oh, where's my stuff? And we're out hunting and they can't get a hold of us kind of deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, we try to communicate really clearly, but we need to be out hunting. We need to be using these tents and trying new things because we're always trying new things. And it gives a good weight to our words when we tell the customer this is going to work because we took this out in the field and used it.
Yeah.
And we got it muddy. You know, we took it through the windstorm. We took it through the snowstorm, et cetera. Yeah.
That's awesome. So leading into my next question, you mentioned that you ship. Is there, how much is shipping usually? Do you, if someone buys a certain tent, do you get free shipping, anything of that stuff? Shipping's
all over the board, it seems like.
Yeah.
It has definitely increased over the years.
Yeah, just with everything. You know.
Yeah. And I can't find fault with the freight companies because the cost of diesel and everything is going up.
Yeah.
So we try to do some things to limit shipping where we can, as far as the cost of it to the end user. But it's, I mean, at some point we have to transfer some of those costs on during maintenance. So we're doing our best on that, but it is definitely fraught with peril this year because I'm watching the freight costs rise and I'm going, ow. So, you know, we can do some things to help them. We can create just the angle kit for them for the frame, and then they can cut their own poles. So that'll save them a lot on motor freight. We had a tent just recently, a pretty large one that went from Washington State all the way to Florida. Motor freight on that was not great. Because that was a pretty large frame, you know, several packages, and yeah, it can add up. But, you know, for the one guy that needs it, and he doesn't want to deal with building his own frame, and he's willing to have a product that's made by our company, you know, he wants it shipped, we're going to ship it.
Yeah. So let's go into prices of your tents. What are they running? Like, I know that there's a variation of sizes, right? Well, what kind of cost can people look into when they're getting that?
It's going to depend on the size and if they're going to stay in a standard size or if they need a customized size.
Yeah.
So the prices kind of are going to change based on that. And then we have two styles of tents. We have our super grade, which is our top of the line tent. And then we have our guide tent, which we're sitting in right now.
Okay.
And right now at the show, you know, we're at $9.99 for this tent. Where you see it sitting with the angle kit, they cut their own poles, which is pretty decent.
That's pretty decent, yeah. What size was this again?
12 by 15.
12 by 15. And so how many, it's a guide tent, so how many people can you fit comfortably inside here?
Do they like each other?
Do they like each other, yeah.
So you can fit, you know, 2 to 3 in here. And I say that tongue in cheek because it depends on, are they cooking in here? Are they going to be here for several weeks? Is it just a week or is it a weekend? You know, and all of that factors into how much room they need. So usually people, when they first start looking at tents, they look a little too small. So we tell them this, get some graph paper, be old school. Cut out all the things you want to take with you, your beds, your cots, your stove, your whatever it is that you're going to take. Cut it out and try it in different arrangements inside that tent if you thought you wanted that size and see if it's going to work for you. And a lot of times they come back and go, you were right. We need to go a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
It just, you know, you factor that stuff in and it looks cavernous until you put stuff in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes too, it's just using your space really well. So we have created in our own personal tent, everything has collapsible legs and they're adjustable because John can weld. So they're all adjustable legs, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we can go up or down if the land's not perfectly flat. And then we have bins that go underneath. So everything's stowed and we have a lot more floor space that way.
Yeah. I think that we covered a lot on the topics of Bravo tents.
Sure.
These are awesome tents. We're sitting inside one. Is there anything else that you wanted us to ask?
Oh my goodness. We are on day, 5 million of the show? No.
Yeah.
We're pretty tired. So, I don't think so. I'll probably think of it later and be like, oh, I should have said.
Shared that, yeah.
Should have said that.
Let's talk a little bit about the show. How is the show and how do shows go for you? And
I love doing the shows because, like I said, it's a lot of time. It's seeing our customers come back in and talk to us in person and spending time talking about their hunts and how it went and family and that kind of thing. So I really enjoy that part. I enjoy doing the seminars and then got some fun stuff coming up at the Portland show that I'm really looking forward to. They've been talking for a while about what they could do to get like a special, just like a ladies event put together. So Candy Yao, the lady I was telling you about earlier, that runs the ladies camp, she is going to MC an event here at the Portland show, and it's the 16th, February 16th that will be running. And it's from 2 to 4 p.m. We're going to have a panel of speakers, all ladies in the industry, fishing guides, myself, I'll be there, and just be up there where ladies can ask us questions, and we'll answer that.
That's really cool.
It'll be a one-on-one kind of a deal. There's going to be a lot of information there that they can gather and send them home with. We're doing some raffles. I don't remember what all they are right now, but
yeah
this, it's going to be a whole cool thing just for them but they can come and feel free to ask whatever. I mean, there are no stupid questions. There really aren't. Yeah, like, they don't know. They got to learn somewhere.
Got to learn right? somehow. Yeah.
And we want them to be in that safe environment where they know that they can ask it and we don't care. None of us care. We're going to be glad to answer it for them and get them out there in the woods.
Yeah. I mean, you're starting out hunting. You really don't know a whole lot.
Right.
And the amount of people that...
I know. I didn't know nothing.
I didn't know either.
Yeah. I told John the other day, I not only did I not know anything, I didn't expect anything either.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, people come up, talk about fishing and hunting, and I'm like, I still learn stuff every time I go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not successful all the time. And
right.
like you were talking about earlier with bear hunting, you walk in, you blow something,
right.
one of the bears out, or you have elk running or deer or whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it goes. So, and you know, we're not able to give you all the answers either.
No, definitely not. And that's why it's great when you have something like this, where it's a ladies panel of a whole bunch of different women and different life experiences and the things that they enjoy and they love, and they bring that excitement and just that enthusiasm to it, to help share it with these other ladies and to help get them started.
That's awesome. Well, cool. I think that was a pretty good podcast. I like to ask everyone at the end of our podcast, usually Kyle and I ask the question, just me today, but what's one word that you can describe yourself?
Oh my.
Yeah, we love to hit you with the curveball, you know?
Well, I think my friends would say stubborn, and they would be right. I like to use the word determined.
Determined. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Very determined personality, bear hunter. So, I would probably use that word.
That's awesome. Well, I just want to say thank you for doing a podcast. First live-ish podcast. So I think it went pretty well. And it's actually a really cool setting to be inside one of your wall tents and having a conversation. People are looking as they're coming by, and they're like, who are those two crazy people in there?
And
so, yeah, it was awesome. So I really appreciate this. And thank you for
inviting me. This was fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a little outro here. And then you want to share real quick, just repeat your women's event coming up here.
Right. So we have the Ladies Day at the Portland Show, and that's February 16th. It runs 2 to 4 p.m. And then the Ladies Hunting Camp, that's July 25th to the 28th. And that is in Dry Creek Ranch, Fort Rock, Oregon. And you can find that information on the Yow Hunting Camp page.
Is there any cost to that camp?
There is, off the top of my head. I don't remember what it is to register. And there are sometimes some sponsorships through the different companies like us that, you know, help with it. But they'd have to talk to Candy about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, cool. I'm going to do a little. I just want to thank Heather for hopping on our podcast today. It's been an awesome experience doing a podcast at the Sportsman Show. So it was really awesome. It's cool. There's a lot going on here. If you didn't get the chance to visit this one, there's going to be the Portland Show, and that's in February 14th. So make sure to go check that out. I heard that one's a lot bigger than this one. So. But this one's always fun. I always look forward to it every year. It's a great way to start off the year. So, So thanks again for hopping on with us, Heather. I just want to say I got an upcoming fly tying event February 17th at 5 p.m. It's going to be $30. We're going to be tying woolly buggers. That's going to be our main focus. You're going to be able to learn. I'll take you through step-by-step on how to tie the fly. And then I've got enough materials that you can tie a couple more of your own, and while I'm there, so I can help you through it. The space is limited. I'm going to have about 8 people. If you have your own vise and tools, that's a bonus. Material is provided, and we start at 5, and there's really not an end to it, but we kind of all just hit a point where we end up going home. So I want to thank Josh Phillips at Spawn Fly Fishing. Josh has been awesome. He helped me out with this class. I came to him with a vision. I did a little bit last year, and I was having people buy materials. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to change it up, and I'm going to do it myself. And so I picked all the materials up, so you don't have to worry about it. And Josh from Spawn really helped out with that and just made the process super, super easy. So huge shout out to Josh Phillips. There is some upcoming events, the Cedar River Cleanup on August 10th.
2024. Get that on, save the date. I know a lot of people come up to me, hey, you know, I'll tell them the cleanup's coming and they tell me, oh, you know, something came up. Well, put it on the calendar now and something can't come up. So that's the way I think of it. Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, there's a, if you listened to our previous podcast, Kyle said there's a bait shack fishing, ice fishing day coming up. Just go back to the previous episode. And if you listen to it, listen to the end again. It has the info, or just re-listen to another episode and you can find it. So, once again, we want to just thank all of our listeners for joining in and listening to our podcast, week by week. And, without you guys, we're not a podcast. So we just really appreciate that. And, we're always open to feedback. So if you have feedback, you can reach out to us on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, both positive and negative, you know, we got to learn somehow. So, if you're interested in being an upcoming guest, you can also reach out to us and, we can, see if you meet our, what we're trying to do here at the Young Guides Podcast. So, we really appreciate you. And, yeah, I think this was another episode of the Young Guides Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.